Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 3 of Side Pitch. It's the podcast from the current creators of the world to the future creators of the world. That's you. This week, we're going to be talking about something a little different than the first two episodes, sports. I've asked one of my friends, John O'Neill, to come in and share his story. And not only does he have an impressive personal story, where he was a Division I collegiate athlete that went into retirement early and then came out on the other side with a chance to compete for a spot on the U.S. Olympic triathlon team. And so that's not even the most impressive part. The cool thing about John is his story about his side pitch, where he took a skill that he had been trying to perfect for nearly his whole life and turned it into a business idea as an adult, a business idea that is generating revenue. So this podcast is for all of my athletes or people who want to start their own business. Listening to what John has to say, it's pretty interesting.
All right. Okay. Well, to introduce myself to your audience, my name's John O'Neill. I live in Stamford, Connecticut, although I'm from Vail, Colorado. My side pitch is professional triathlon, cycling, and running coaching. I've been doing this since 2015 alongside careers in travel as a business development manager.
Great. So let me hear first your journey with being a triathlete and then how that kind of helped bring your side pitch to fruition.
Yeah, sure. When I started as a runner, I was actually a terrible runner. I went out for the high school cross country team like anybody. I didn't really even want to play soccer. I didn't really want to do any sports, but that wasn't an option in my family, who's really active. So really, it was just a matter of what sport I was going to do. And I kind of settled on cross country as a way to keep in shape for skiing. Growing up in Vail, you're always looking for something to do in the summers, and it's beautiful there. So putting on running shoes and going out into the mountains was something that I thought would be interesting. But the caveat was I was actually really bad at it. My freshman year, I think I ran 24 minutes over 5K. I didn't do that much better my sophomore year. But all of a sudden, something kind of flipped my senior year where I was taking the advice of my coach. I was training really consistently, and then I was getting these great results, and it instantly created this traction in my mind where in endurance sports, what you put into it is exactly what you get out of it, and sort of became addicted to this investment of time. And having this inspiration from a coach in high school, his name was Rob Parrish, really led me through that period from being interested in running, not being a good runner. And then eventually my senior year, I ran a little under 16 minutes in a 5K and was able to get a college scholarship. So I moved from high school to Colorado State University. And while I had a very good coach in high school, my coaching experience in college was very poor. Just in general, we tended to butt heads. I disagreed with the training. I was constantly injured. I felt like I wasn't getting anything individualized. I wrapped up running in college with a number of injuries and really just kind of burnt out on competing and endurance sports. And I was looking forward to getting a job and going back to Vail and just skiing and enjoying life. But, you know, I still kind of suffer a bit from that competitive addiction and just, you know, pitting myself against others and, you know, no matter if it's business or sports. And so I picked up triathlon mostly because I was so injured from running. Getting in the pool and swimming, getting on the bike and riding were sort of low impact alternatives to getting out and just pounding pavement running all the time. And of course, I think I was training for like 3 weeks before I decided I'm going to register for a race and this is going to be fun. It'll just be for fun, this race. And then I did the race and I got like fourth place in the small race in Colorado. Yeah, it just felt good to do something new and different and just hitting the finish line felt so satisfying after kind of suffering in three different ways. Yeah, so I decided to kind of invest some time and train hard and I kind of drew up a schedule for myself. Not long after that, I found my way into a program by USA Triathlon, which is the national governing body that oversees the US's participation of triathlon. And they had a program where if you ran fast enough in college and could swim fast enough in the pool, then you would get coaching support and some equipment because triathlon is very expensive. And so I dedicated some time to swimming fast enough in the pool and oddly enough, hit those times quickly. Got invited to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, where I lived for about 6 months, did training camps with USA Triathlon over in Europe, and continued to race professionally for about 5 years from 2013 to 2018, with the goal of making the Olympic team in 2016, which I unfortunately did not do. I didn't make the team, but to back up, while I was racing as a professional athlete, I had incredible coaches. As you can imagine, you're at the Olympic Training Center. You're surrounded by greatest physiologists, folks who have dedicated their lives to studying how to make an athlete go faster, get stronger, do better. And mimicking some of that personalization that I got as a professional athlete, avoiding some of the, you know, bad coaching I felt like I had in college, and drawing on some of the inspiration that I had in high school is kind of what led me to create my own coaching service business.
I have so many questions from that little excerpt. That is amazing. So here's my first question. So when you were talking about being back in high school, you kind of fell into it. You said you wanted to remain active. So was it ever something where you were like, okay, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get a scholarship, and I'm going to be a runner? Or was it something like, okay, well, I'm almost there, might as well keep pushing?
It wasn't that way. For a long time, it was just about having a community, right? You're in high school, it's weird, you know, you just want to have friends. And I found my group of friends on the running team. And that's sort of what motivated me. But it was my senior year when I saw the path forward, noticed that when I did the training that my coach prescribed, and I did well in races, that I was getting attention from college programs. And I remember getting mail from like the principal, thinking it was one thing, and really it was an offer letter from a coach to come out and visit their school and talk to their running program about going there. So yeah, it really was my senior year, which is late in the game to decide that you want to run in college. Before that, I'd say it was just casual.
So then fast forward into college, you said that you didn't have phenomenal coaching, which is imperative in an athlete's success. I played college volleyball and my coach was a sports psychologist. He talked a lot about how they learn you need to be able to talk to athletes to get their mentality straight on. And I'm assuming that's the same for runners as well.
Yeah, and they say running's, you know, 90% mental. And the training is a big piece of that, right? When you're out working hard on a Tuesday afternoon after you finish classes, and you know, you'd much rather be at the fraternity boozing it up with all your friends, but instead you're running on a track and feel like you're going to puke after every rep. I think it is mental. And my problem with my college coach in particular was compounded by the fact that I don't think he had a good grasp of physiology. I think he had an idea of what a very old school program would be, where you just get one set of workouts that everybody's doing. Some are getting faster and some are getting injured. And I was the one that was getting injured. So take that. You're constantly injured. You have the weight of your tuition payments if you end up getting dropped from the scholarship program. And on top of that, you just hurt all the time. You walk around. I couldn't even walk from one campus building to another without, you know, significant pain in my legs from, yeah, really just was a mental challenge as well as a physical one. And they're so closely tied.
After your senior year, you graduated. So glad you got through those 4 years and you were like, I'm done. I'm done with running. Or was that when you went straight into trying to find alternative things like swimming and biking?
Callan, I was so done. I could barely walk downstairs. Like, it was a necessary break just for my physical recovery. And mentally, yeah, I was totally done. I had a scholarship that I probably could have kept through 5 years. I finished my education in 3.5 years and then went to New Zealand for 3 months and mostly just surfed and hung out on the island with, you know, great people and did a little bit of running there, but, you know, still was not drawn towards athletics at all. Really, where it re-sparked for me is where you are now in London. I had gone back after travel in New Zealand, actually took a trip over to London, and I was there between the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games, and they still had all the venues set up, and I was in Hyde Park, and I was talking to a guy who was helping with one of the triathlon venues. Like, he was just telling me about how amazing it was, and I had obviously just watched the Olympics and was getting ready to watch the Paralympics. And just something about the Olympics just lit fire in me and just wanting to get back into doing some kind of racing, obviously not thinking about the Olympics at all, but just getting out and competing again.
Oh, and I feel like every athlete has a fire in them and that makes them ultra competitive. So was it really just that moment you realized I'm getting back into it? Or did you have to take some time and say, all right, am I really about to put my body through this again? How will I make sure that this doesn't end up the same way where I can't walk?
Really, it was just getting into the pool and swimming again, just for health purposes, and getting a bike. And just, it was the feeling of getting better at something again that got me interested in pursuing it at a higher level, especially since I was just a runner in triathlon, swimming, biking, and running. All of a sudden I was in the pool and I was, you know, I was terrible at it. But every time I swam, I got better. The rate of improvement in the beginning is really aggressive. And the same thing with the bike, where it just felt like I was getting better at it, which as an athlete is important to me. Kind of like a business, you're either growing or dying. As an athlete, you're either, you know, improving or retired.
And just out of curiosity, do you feel that everyone, if they did the right training, would be able to complete a triathlon or be a triathlete?
Absolutely. I mean, look at some of the inspiration you can draw from, you know, the Paralympic sports that we get. You want to compete in basketball at a high level, but you're confined to a wheelchair. Like, there's a way for you to get out and compete and become, you know, an incredible athlete. And the same goes with triathlon. The para triathlete stories of, like, Melissa Stockwell, for instance, if any of your listeners want to look her up, is incredible and motivating. And what I think is surprising, when I was at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, there was a lot of the Paralympic athletes present. And throughout, you know, the course of your day, think about how many people you run into who carry some sort of, you know, physical disability or something that might, you know, keep them from competing in a sport that, you know, you might view as competitive. And then you have these Paralympians that you are seeing every single day competing at a very high level in their sport, you know, whether they're blind, whether they're missing an arm, whether they, you know, were born with a disease or developed MS later in life, and they're competing at a really high level. So, you know, I think it takes more drive from those athletes, and that's really incredible. So when it comes to doing an Ironman triathlon, it doesn't matter who you are, you could do it. You can. You just have to figure out a way. And it might be creative and it might take a lot of work, but you can do it.
I know a lot of my friends have downloaded like the Couch to 5K app or like the Nike Run app. Have you ever worked with any of those?
Yeah, I'm a avid Strava addict, which is sort of a social platform for fitness where you can share what you're doing, see how you stack up to your friends on particular segments, or even just anybody who's done that segment. And actually, I moved to Connecticut in January, so it's been helpful to kind of build a fitness community using people you meet on those apps.
So now I'm really intrigued, and I'm sure a lot of people's ears perked up when you got a chance to go and train at an Olympic facility. So what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible to me. And I grew up in Vail, Colorado, which has a very high output of Olympic medalists from winter sports, skiers. Think Michaela Schifrin, Lindsey Vonn, probably some names that jump to mind. And setting foot in the Olympic Training Center was kind of that moment where I was like, whoa, you know, I'm on to something big here. Like, this is my chance. Seeing the athletes every day that you idolized. Like, I remember meeting Shalane Flanagan in the cafeteria. She is one of the greatest marathoners of all time, probably the greatest American marathoner of all time. And just being without words, you know, what you were going to say to her, and then just blown away by how easy it was to talk to them. It tore down these mental barriers that there's this floor above you that only select people are invited to. It just made it seem like, here you are, this is your opportunity, here are the other athletes that have done it, you know, and it just lowers the barrier mentally significantly. That was my experience at the training center. I was in the pool with Ryan Lochte at one point, and I remember Michael Phelps coming. It was just like, they were there to train, and you were there to train. So you were having the same purposes as them, which is to go to the Olympics and win a medal for the country.
Then you did definitely have some type of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, in the beginning, I think it's hard for people to realize that what they want is really just one corner away from where they are. And all it takes is a plan to get there.
In the Olympic training facility, you said that it was phenomenal. Why were those coaches, what made them so phenomenal in your experience?
So take that experience I had in college where this coach just, you know, posted a workout to a wall that we would go out and do. Compare that to the Olympic Training Center where we had a nutritionist who would study how much we were sweating over the course of a 1 hour bike ride, deriving from that how much salt we needed to take in during competition so that when you got off the bike to run, you were ready to run at the optimal ability level or the optimal salt count on the run and not be drugged down from something nutrition related. We had sports physiologists who put us through strength assessments that would identify imbalances in the body, whether you had weakness in your core or in your glutes or maybe one hip instead of the other that wouldn't necessarily become visible until you were injured. They were able to identify these things and create strength programs so that you could continue to train without the fear of injury. We would get 2 1-hour massages a week. We had swim coaches on the deck at the pool every single day, putting us through the workout and sort of monitoring the workout as we went through it. So if you were having a hard time, they would pull you out and make you rest for 2 days. In college, that would be your week, or you're not dedicating yourself enough to this. There was no analysis of the plan. It was all on the athlete's ability to hit the plan. And at the training center, the plan that you were on evolved constantly. I had a coach named Greg Mueller, who leads the Innovative Endurance team, who would make me take my pulse ox every morning to gauge how recovered I was from the previous day's training session, how well my sleep was. And from that, he would create the day's training schedule, hyper-personalized training.
That is amazing. I'm just trying to think of how powerful that is to be able to go and do a workout and not have any fear of injury or of fatigue, and just being able to perform at your top level. That is so freeing.
Yeah, it was incredible. They could almost identify problems before you ran into them based on like cumulative fatigue. There was a time when I was just constantly exhausted, and they said, you need to go see an endocrinologist. You know, we're worried about thyroid issues. And I went and saw them, and they said, you need to increase iodized salt in your diet, boost thyroid production. And sure enough, you know, after like something as simple of a fix as putting more salt on my food, like specifically iodized salt, my thyroid was able to function in a more healthy way, and I was back competing at a higher level.
You've used the word personalized a lot, and I know that's the way that you describe what you do. Do you think that your experience in college, in high school, and also in the Olympic Training Center is what really made this idea catch on?
Yeah, 100%. My business is also motivated by making money, which every business should. I think a lot of good things come from the desire to, you know, drive profitability into your business. And in 2016, I had knee surgery. And you go from relying on, you know, money from sponsors or money from competitions to all of a sudden I was 26. I was getting kicked off my parents' health insurance. I was not racing, so I didn't have that source of income. I wasn't making much money from sponsors. And I just had to assess, like, what do I have? Like, what value can I give to the world? What do I possess that's valuable? And it was, you have all this knowledge from years of training and different coaching experiences, good and bad. You should coach. And so that's kind of what prompted this idea. How can I create something that's going to, A, help me make money? And sort of the short term was what I was thinking about at the time. And B, serve a purpose in the market by providing a product that doesn't really exist. So as an example, you talked about like couch to 5K. When you're looking at those plans, they're very standardized. And you might be able to enter, like, I'm a beginner runner and I want to run a 5K. And then you get 5 workouts to do over 3 weeks. And then after that, you run your 5K. And that's great. But the only touch point you had with that app was, I'm a beginner and I want to run a 5K. How great would it be if you could check in at 1 week and say, how easy was the workout out this week? You know, how much time do you have next week? What do you have going on in your life? How stressful are things? Are you traveling for work this week? You know, what's your ability to dedicate time to the workouts this week? And then the following week, check in and adjust. And if you then got 3 weeks down and you ran a 5K, the athlete who had the more personalized experience, I think, is going to run faster than the athlete that didn't. And that was my goal, was to provide a training plans for athletes who want to compete at a high level, who are still amateurs, but want to do the best they can with the time they have.
So tell me, I guess, from the start of the business idea, from conception all the way to launch, what did that look like?
Yeah. So I sort of just found a happy medium between the hyper-personalization that I got at the Olympic Training Center and even thereafter with other high-performance coaches and some of those standardized plans. So I basically created just a service. So there's no app. It's all me writing the plans, but the plans are updated weekly. So I sit down with my athletes. We have a conversation about a goal, even if it's over email, something that they want to achieve. And then we start building a general plan that would get us there from where we are in this moment. And then they have no more than 1 week of workouts in front of them at a time. Throughout that week, I'm monitoring their training to some extent, having a conversation with that athlete over email, and then updating the training for the next week based on what happened the previous week and what they have the ability to do in the coming week.
How many athletes do you coach at one time?
So because I work another full-time job, I try to stay between 6 and 10 athletes. I feel like that's the level with my current job that I can provide that high level of service that's worth it to them for, you know, the money that they pay me. And so I'm on the cheaper end for a much higher personalized service, but it serves a good purpose for me, and my athletes get a very good plan and make a nice side income from it. It's something that I'm passionate about, and I can stay in touch with the sport. I retired from professional triathlon in 2018. It seems to be working. I mean, the product is durable to the point where I haven't had high wash in the athletes that I coach. Those that I coach tend to come back to me when they want to achieve their goal for the next race. And that's really how I see my product as being valuable.
I was actually just looking through your Instagram and I saw one really awesome post that you had where you started out saying, I've had a lot of ambition for my 2019 triathlon goals, but let me show you these awesome people who have actually blown their goals out of the water. And it was a picture of 6 athletes and their amazing accomplishments. Were those your athletes?
Yeah, so that's sort of the group of athletes that I work with mostly. I've been coaching them since the beginning, and they've really sort of created a community amongst themselves. They meet up and do training workouts together. They'll ask me in an email like, hey, I'm going to be in Vail this weekend. Can you set up my schedule to align with one of the other athletes that you're coaching, and they'll meet up and work out. So it sort of fosters the community aspect of sport, which is huge for me. It always was for me.
That's so huge. And so I actually use Strava as well. And there is so much community around it. I joined a work from home group, and now people from across London are liking my runs. I name them really ridiculous things, so maybe that's why I get likes, not because of good time.
I don't doubt that. I'll be looking you up immediately after this.
Oh God. So then are all of your athletes located in Vail mostly?
Mostly. So there's a big population of folks from Mexico City and across Mexico who live in Vail, have second homes in Vail. And so I coach a number of great Mexican athletes, but most of the tie is to Vail. So I have had athletes in California, in different parts of Colorado, and who knows.
When you came up with this idea, did you tell any of your other friends or like other athletes and say, hey, would you use this? Or was this just something that you were like, I'm going to do this. We'll see if there's a bite.
Yeah. One of my best friends, his name's AJ Bauco. He runs a training group. He's been really successful with it. It's his full-time thing. And he was a great sounding board, because in the beginning, there are a lot of things that you need to figure out. He was helpful, but I did hear in your first podcast with Bailey, something that was really interesting to me is the importance of just telling somebody that you want to do something, and it creates this peer pressure that you're going to actually get out and do it. I don't think it's necessary for everybody, but it was for me.
And I think anybody who sees that you have Olympic training to your name, that's got to perk up their ears.
Yeah, I think so. And I hope it doesn't cause any sort of intimidation, because that's the other piece that I think holds a lot of athletes back is, to me, in my mind, you know, a goal is a goal. If you want to go out and run a marathon and you want to run 5 hours, we can work on that. And you can be really proud of going out and doing that. If you want to run a marathon in 2.5 hours, we can create a plan for that. And that can also make you proud. I hope that being at a high level is seen more of, you know, experience that I can derive to provide good coaching versus this is going to be way too intense.
How did you market to get your athletes?
Well, I built a website. I went to Wix and I bought a domain and got on social media and sort of announced that I was going to start coaching. And I had a little bit of a following. And a lot of that honestly fell flat compared to word of mouth. So I started coaching a neighbor of mine. And I think just what I provided to her was good in the sense that she wasn't able to find it anywhere else, right? The personalization, the weekly updates. And so she told some of her friends that I was coaching her, and then her friends signed on. And then all of the sudden, the people that they were competing against started finding out, you know, who's doing your coaching. And then, you know, word of mouth kind of spreads that way. So I'd say it's more heavily word of mouth. I mean, to the point where I actually sort of dynamited my online presence, which if you wanted to make this sort of a full-time thing or you're just getting started, I don't advise it. But I probably turn down more athletes than I take on now, just out of time pressure on myself and being able to keep up with the athletes that I have. and the service that I want to provide. It's right. It's maybe not the most scalable thing. But for now, it's all word of mouth, and that I would never underestimate the power of word of mouth, your reputation, and the quality of the product that you provide.
Would you ever make this into your full-time job?
Yeah, in a different way. My biggest regret is I'm not as hands-on as I would like to be. In the future, maybe doing more like training camps where I could get, 50 athletes to come out for a week and, and we meet up every day and we do two sessions a day and create some valuable takeaways for things that they can go home with and give to maybe another coach that they work with and say, these are all the things I learned or the things that I want to work on. So that's something that interests me. But again, I'm not sure if I would actually have to do that full time or if I could just take a week off work to organize it.
Previously, when you were saying that you bounced your idea off of your friend and you were like, there were a few things that you kind of need to figure out before you launch something like this. Do you have a few examples of what those things are for anybody who is thinking, wow, maybe I should do this?
Yeah, I think in services, you have to figure out a good way to communicate with the people that you work with, if you're a coach of any kind. And that could be as easy as like Google Docs, right? And there was a program called Adaro that used to exist. It was free and I could post training for my athletes there. They could sync up their GPS watches and their heart rate monitors. So when they finished a workout, it just, auto uploaded all their data for me to look at. And, that's something that I learned from AJ, who is using that same program. Do your research in a way that you can communicate. And I'd say really find out what's vital for your business. And if you're in the services business, communication is probably the most important thing. The other piece too, that I had not as much advisement as I needed in the beginning was how to handle like the business side of things. And I wish I would have asked more questions on that, gone ahead and got a QuickBooks account for the self-employed to keep track of how much money am I really spending on this? How much money am I really making on this? Like, can I compile a P&L of some kind here to make sure this is worth it for me? And, how much did I actually make? How much do I need to legally report? Like, those are all really important things if you're running a business that you get so obsessed with everything that's creative and fun about it that you need to be dialed on the business side. And it's not hard. It just takes the type of time you don't enjoy giving up.
I could totally see that. What are three pieces of advice that you would give anyone trying to start something creative on the side or even a revenue generating company or business on the side?
I think the first thing, since we're talking about side businesses here, is you have to have some passion for whatever it is that you're doing so that when you finish your job and you come home and it's 7:30 and you're going to open your laptop up again to do work for another 2 hours, you got to really enjoy the work that it is that you're doing. The second thing is don't have too much ego about your product. It will work in some ways and it won't work in others. And sometimes you have to say the way I'm going about doing things is not right. For me, it was trying to do all this, online marketing for something that's, hyper personalized. It just didn't work. And so I kind of abandoned that and went to word of mouth and didn't see much hit to the business. If anything, it just gave me more time to give back to my athletes. The third thing is you have something that you're passionate about. It is you have to make sure that what you're doing is durable. And also you are committed to seeing it through if you want to have something that's successful and longstanding. I've been doing it for 4 years now. And every Sunday I open my laptop and I write training plans. And throughout the week I have calls with different athletes to hear about how things are going. And the fact that it's been a very similar stable of athletes from the beginning. And the fact that I can still open my laptop on a Sunday and do it means I'm doing something right.
Loving everything that you're saying. And I think it's cool because I don't think a lot of people would have ever thought of doing something like this. But back to my original point from the very beginning of the podcast, I think a lot of people, especially in the US, like we are born and bred to do sports. Like you do three sports and some of us go on to college and play sports. But then after that, it's kind of over. And you're like, what do I do with all this time and all this competitive energy that I have? And if you don't put it into your work, you have to find another outlet. So I would have never thought that this would be an option to even do virtual coaching sessions. So this could open up, a lot of inspiration for people.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think athletes do like enough of that. If I could just add that as a point, in this world, we operate differently in business than the world of old, where you would look at a skill that you have that's valuable to others and create a business from it. And athletes, especially athletes who made it through college, have operated at such a high level that they've seen things that either work or don't work, and they are sure about it. And they could give back to their community in a way that they can make money from it and solve a problem or create a better circumstance for an athlete going forward. I mean, if you competed in college like you did in volleyball and you could help another athlete get a college scholarship, there's a huge market for that specifically. But it takes, you know, dedication and good coaching to get there.
And if they are super inspired by what you've said today, where can they find you to contact you?
This is going to sound terrible, but you should probably just send me a message on Instagram. I spend way too much time on Instagram. My handle is just JR O'Neill_. Or you can send me an email at johnrobertoneill@gmail.com. Yeah, if anybody, you know, is interested in just talking about how to get it going, I have plenty of time to go through it with you.
Yeah, could definitely tell he's a coach. I'm fired up. Watch out, Strava followers. One thing that really resonated with me that John said was finding a skill that you know you're really good at and finding a way that you can use that to impact your community or just someone else's life, and then build a business idea around that. As long as you take the time to build the infrastructure to make the business durable and sustainable, what have you got to lose? And on that note, we're wrapping up episode 3. You can find Side Pitch on Spotify, Apple Music, and Castbox, almost anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. And don't forget to check out our website, www.sidepitchpodcast.com, and there you can find the audio transcriptions of each episode. Get ready for next week, because I have a special surprise for you in honor of Pride Month. And just like our next guest would say, it's going to be fabulous. See you next week! We're coming for you!